This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey guys, quick thing. The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only question left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It's back, the Arsenal News Show, with plenty of transfers to discuss, but mainly outgoings, which could infer what Arsenal might do in the summer. We've got Edu taking trips abroad and decisions to be made on some of our key senior players. And not only that, but there's some rumours of an exit, or at least suggestions of the offer of an exit for one of the most talked about players at the club. No, thank you. This is the Arsenal News Show. Hello and welcome to the Gooner Talk, back again with you guys for another episode of what is the Arsenal News Show. Join you every single morning at 8 a.m. UK time. It's been an absolute pleasure joining you throughout the course of this series, and it continues to be so. If you could drop a like on the video and subscribe to the channel, that would be incredibly appreciated. We try and reach 1,000 likes on every single show that we do at 8 a.m. So if you could be ever so kind to drop a press on that thumbs up, it really does help us out and keeps us going on our challenge towards what is hopefully going to be a very prosperous season. We keep going. But good morning to those joining us live this morning as well. Hope you're doing good. Hope you're doing well. We've got Darren and Matt G and Blackshine. We've got Maximius. We've got Martin and Barry, Cena, another Martin, Barry, Amira, Chris, Blackshines, Shari, Mark. We've got Trevor, Damien, GZ4, Rowan, Jose, Temi, Adegoke, Jason, NSW, Stevie, Angela, Stephen, Ryan, Tom and Pat. Thank you so much to all of you and more for tuning in. You are all incredibly appreciated. Please do drop that like. It would be incredibly humbling for you to do so, even joining us for the first time on YouTube. Welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's great to see some new faces and some new names in the chat. As we approach the end of the season, the channel continues to grow. It continues to expand, and you are all a big part of that. So thank you. BZTC says, Tom, stop saying joining us at 8 a.m. each day. I'm going to keep saying it because that's exactly what time it is, and that's exactly what time you need to tune in for, UK time. Every single day. Right, we're going to start our stories for today with Declan Rice. It's a pretty Athletic-heavy show this morning. The Athletic dropping plenty of news yesterday for Arsenal fans to sink their teeth into, and one of those pieces was a long-form interview with Declan Rice. I'm not going to read you through the whole thing because that'd be pretty unfair. So you can, of course, read through the entire interview on the Athletic website. But one key point that I wanted to pick out was a question regarding why indeed he chose Arsenal instead of the chance to play alongside Rodri at Manchester City for this season. And quite short and simply, he said, the project seems more exciting than Man City's. And that's why I chose to come to Arsenal, because I believe we're going on to big things here. And it's great to hear. I mean, it's good to ask the question, but it's fantastic to see him talk so specifically about why Arsenal were the more tempting, enticing pathway project for him as a midfielder. And especially because could have been playing alongside Rodri over the course of this season. But knowing that we are going ahead and towards some really exciting things was enough to convince him that this was the place to be. I just wish the entirety of our fan base could see that reality. But we move. Moving into another Athletic story, courtesy of David Ornstein. Edu visited Saudi Arabia in a meet and greet trip. It's not suggested that this was any kind of transfer line. What it was kind of an idea of Arsenal becoming familiar with the Saudi Arabian people that are involved in the league, in the sport, or decision makers in the nation, because Saudi Arabia are a growing force within the sport. We've seen millions and millions of pounds invested into players across Europe and, of course, in England as well. Arsenal have not had any dealings so far with Saudi Arabian clubs. We've seen suggestions that Thomas Partey is of interest to some of those clubs and was last summer. Could that, again, happen this summer? But building those connections, networking, and always, of course, Edu talking about being in that, or rather us knowing that Edu is doing that, is really, really important. However, one of the stories of which you will not find to be too enticing, perhaps, is the latest surrounding Chido Obi-Martin, the Danish 16-year-old who has taken things by storm. I mean, he has been absolutely stunning for Arsenal. Well, his former club, FC Copenhagen's director Sune Smith-Nielsen, has been speaking to Tipsbladet, in which they said that he is welcome back when Arsenal doesn't give him a chance. I'll give you the full quote. They said, yes, he played with us until he was 13 years old when his family then moved to London. I think it was the mother who got a job in London and then the father and brothers moved with her. He was a huge talent and he has been a huge talent since he was 6 years old. At times he played with age groups 2 years older and he has always had tremendous offensive potential. He has wild technique and fantastic physical attributes. We are very excited that he is doing so well over at Arsenal. Then he can always come to FC Copenhagen's first team when Arsenal doesn't give him the chance. Spiky. To me, that sounds a little bit, you know, inevitable almost. Claiming that Arsenal, they're not going to give him the chance. When they don't give him the chance, he can come and play senior football at a young age for FC Copenhagen. I mean, I appreciate it. And fair play, stick by your guns. But I don't see a future where that is happening right now. I could get proven wrong, very much so. But Arsenal, to my understanding, are very excited by Chido Obi-Martin. And when he turns 17 next year, of course, we'll be looking to offer him that first professional contract that he's going to be very excited to see him sign. Because I think for a lot of fans, they see him as a potential future centre forward of the club. I say next year, actually, it's November of this year he turns 17. So we will not, I don't think, be seeing him head back to Denmark anytime soon. And Arsenal are in a very, very good position to continue with the player that has scored 28 goals for the under-18s this season, breaking Follerin Balogun's record. And in just the last 7 games, he scored not 1, not 2, not 3, not 7, not 15, not 20, but 24 of those 28 goals have come in the last 7 games, which is quite a stunning feat. Now, continuing forwards and still sticking with the Athletic, the David Ornsteins. I mean, if you want to call him the David Ornstein, it's not a bad descriptor these days because he's just so knowledgeable in the sphere. But Mr. Ornstein has written a piece surrounding Jorginho. Suggestions are that Arsenal have made an offer to the Italian midfielder and that the expectation is that he will sign this new deal. Arsenal, of course, as we reported on football.london as well previously, that Arsenal were looking to extend his time with the club. And I certainly feel as though that this is a deserved contract. He is a key part of the squad. His experience is really appreciated within the group. And he's performed to an exceptional level. Think about the game against Liverpool earlier this year. He was stunningly good in that fixture for us against one of our toughest opponents throughout the course of the season. He won man of the match in that game when we won 3-1 against Liverpool. He is a really important part of this team and Arsenal are doing the right thing in trying to keep hold of him for the foreseeable future. Now, where does this obviously leave Thomas Partey? Well, his future remains unclear at this stage. He has 1 year left on his contract. I spoke to Thomas Partey a few weeks ago for football.london and asked him about his future and he said that he's happy at the club and he just wants to play as many games as he can between now and the end of the season. However, there is always that scope that he could leave in the summer if Arsenal get a sizable offer and feel as though it is the better decision to see him sold and bring the money in for the final opportunity that they will probably get to bring any money for him. And then, of course, reinvest that in another midfielder. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But his future at the moment, it seems, remains very much unclear. Now, the final story to talk about is one that dropped only just moments ago. James McNicholas, again with The Athletic, who are really smashing it in the last 24 hours, have suggested that Arsenal are ready to listen to offers for Gabriel Jesus. So there is an openness potentially that if they receive a very good offer for the Brazilian international, that they could be tempted to sell. Jesus's opportunities in the Arsenal first team have, of course, diminished quite considerably over the last 6 months. His injuries have played a big part in that, and the rise of Kai Havertz has played a considerable part in that as well. Now, Arsenal centre forward options are fairly frequent. We've got Havertz, we've got Trossard, we've got Nketiah, we've got Jesus, of course, as well. And we've got this young striker coming through the ranks as well, which I think is going to garner a lot of interest as he turns 17. Saka made his senior debut, remember, at 17. Nwaneri made his at 15. So it's not beyond the realms of imagination that Chidi Obi-Martin could get some senior minutes in the coming seasons. But Jesus's time, it seems, is going to be considerably restricted. I've spoken to him before. You've heard my conversations with Jesus about his future and about the environment of his club that he plays for, being linked to other strikers and playing with strikers like Aguero, who, of course, are ahead of him as well. But a sale, I think, from an Arsenal perspective, would be able to get the considerable amount of money through the door for a player who is not a guaranteed starter. He does, however, offer a significant amount of depth. And if he was sold, Arsenal, I think, would certainly need to be looking to replace him with some considerable quality in that forward line. As we've heard, Arsenal are keen on a centre forward. It's just not necessarily the priority position at the moment, with midfield and the wide areas, for me and my understanding, at least, to be slightly above that. Right, let's go to part two and your questions then, right after this.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. And the same goes at McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with Mook Delivery. Are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, we're jumping into the chat box now to tackle as many of your questions as we can. Right, Olu says, smart move by the club. We can bring in, say, a Williams and a Sesko or Gyökeres, and we can go next season with Saka, Martinelli, Havertz, Trossard, and then two of those signings for three positions. Nelson, Eddie, Jesus leaving. It does seem like the most area of change in the coming years for Arsenal will be in that centre forward and those wide positions. I don't necessarily think it's going to be like rotational change, but I think we are going to see a couple of players move on and potentially one or two players brought in as well. And I think that players like a Gyökeres, like a Sesko, who certainly is a player that is admired, you know, I think that there are certainly options for Arsenal this summer, and it will be maybe a younger profile. Well, it certainly I think will be. I'm saying that's what I'm told, is going to be a younger profile striker that Arsenal look to, as opposed to your Ivan Toney type profiles of this world, which was perhaps something they were considering before, but no longer is on the radar. Jackie says, Tom, what happens with Eddie? Should we sell Jesus? Do you think we will get in two forwards or a striker and one versatile forward who can cover Saka in a striker position? Well, Jesus has played plenty of games in a wide position for Arsenal, of course. So if you were to see both of them moved on, I think Arsenal will have more scope to bring in, you know, I still think two forwards I'd like. If Jesus and Eddie were to go, I'd like to see Arsenal bring in two players. Does that mean Nelson would move on? Would Nelson then stay and provide yet more depth in those positions? I'm not sure. There's scope, of course, that you could bring through some young players. You've got players like Amario Kojadubri, although his contract is something of a question mark as well. And as I mentioned before, you've got Chido Obi-Martin, who's coming through the ranks as well, incredibly highly thought of. So strikers' signings may not always be the way forward. They may look to recruit from within. And when I've asked Arteta about, you know, recruitment, he always maintains that they look from within first for solutions before looking outwards and into the market, which is what you should do. As always, to give opportunities and see if you can not only, of course, save money and not waste money, but give opportunities to players that deserve it, which has always been something of a bit of a crux for some people in their criticism towards Arteta as well. 20 says, I think a young striker makes a lot of sense with the success of Havertz. We don't need to spend £100 million on somebody who's probably not going to bring us £100 million worth of goals. You're absolutely right. I mean, look at Darwin Nunez, for instance. He's certainly not made good on that €100 million investment that Liverpool have made. Malone has joined us in the chat box and says, hi Tom, thanks for doing this every morning. It's my daily ritual and brings me some comfort discussing Arsenal. I've been struggling with mental health and your chat room and pod helps so much. Come on, you gooners. Well, Malone, thank you for sharing some really personal information there, and I'm sure it wasn't easy to, but you are amongst friends, and thank you so much for making this a part of your routine. I'm so glad that it does provide that clarity and help. Trust me, doing this myself provides some mental health support to me as well, so I absolutely empathize with your position. And if you are in need of help, please go and seek it out. It's certainly worth it. As someone who's gone through therapy myself, I can recommend it incredibly highly. Talking to people really, really does help. Clive says, keep Obi Martin at all costs. It's not just the number of goals, it's the quality of his finishing. What a cool dude. Do you think he'll get chances next season? It depends upon the situation, Clive, and it depends upon, obviously, what we do in the market. I think there's opportunities in the cup competition to give these kids more chances. And I think, actually, to be fair, there's times where Arteta should have given opportunities to players when we haven't. You think about the Lons game, you think about the Wolves game at the end of last season, Mario Kojadubri sitting on the bench for a dead rubber and doesn't come off the bench. These are chances we've missed, and I think Arteta needs to be slightly better in that regard. He's still better than what some people give him credit for, but he can certainly do more, and I hope that is the case. Yassine says, Tom, why are you called Tom? Is there a special meaning? My great-granddad was called Tom, so that's where that name comes from. Lewis says, Tom, did you see that Gary O'Neill has been given a touchline ban for the City game? Yes, I did. I probably should have included that in the first section, to be fair. So thank you, Lewis, for reminding me. But yes, he has been given, for the moment, a touchline ban, which is obviously no help to Arsenal. Wolves are... It's interesting. City have got to play Wolves and West Ham. Wolves and West Ham behind Arsenal are the two teams to have taken the most points, supposedly, off big six sides. So it's quite good that they're playing those two teams. Problem is, they're playing them at a time of the season where they probably have as little to play for as possible. And now, of course, with Gary O'Neill on the sidelines and not very much on the touchline, it could have another impact on their competitivity, if that's even a word. Competitiveness, that's the word. But there you go. Dickens says, Obi Martin has no clear path into the first team. No academy graduate has under our beloved coach, who's a perfection. No time for trials. I mean, it's not true, Dickens. Nwaneri, of course, made yet another senior appearance this season and signed a brand new professional contract. And he did that because the club will have had open discussions with him about his pathway. Absolutes like Arteta doesn't give youth a chance, or there's no chance for youth, are incorrect and wrong, and certainly are a misrepresentation of the facts. Arteta has given 7 senior debuts to Hailing graduates during his time at a club where they are only looking to progress, where the pressure has never been higher, where the expectation from fans like you for Arsenal to succeed has never been higher. But at the same time, we then want to take down the quality level by giving opportunities to young stars. And I ask, when? There's certainly been some opportunities where he could have done more, but not enough of those have been taken. But at the same time, there are still too many examples where he has given opportunities that play that supporters like yourself, Dickens, cannot sit there and say players like Obi Martin will categorically not be given a chance. It's a misrepresentation, it's wrong, and it needs to be changed. Vanna Duty says, do we need to invest in buying clubs to improve our young players and loanees to give them a best chance of fulfilling their potential at Arsenal? Without question. Yes, of course we do. Of course we need to go and look into these potential partnerships with clubs. Multi-club models is something that is being encouraged by footballing and governing bodies. It is not something being dissuaded. Clubs are being allowed to do it. Chelsea have recently done it with Strasbourg. Clubs as to the level of Sheffield United have multi-club models as well. It's something that Arsenal do need to get better at. At the moment, the players that we've got on loan from the first team, of course, we expect to come back and probably be sold or leave on free contracts. The players that are on loan away with the academy side, I don't necessarily see having a future at Arsenal. Players like Brook Norton-Cuffey, players like Omar Rekic, players like Salah Edin Uladamhan, players like Mika Bierreff, Patino. You know, these are players, Charles Sago Jr., I don't expect to have futures necessarily at Arsenal. I think they will be sold. Would it have been different if we had a partner club to get them more guaranteed game time? Would they be progressing better? Would they be getting us a higher fee when they leave? Maybe. But it's certainly something I've been an advocate of and would like to see Arsenal go into an avenue to try and search for, but it's not something that I've seen or heard any concrete suggestions of happening anytime soon as of yet. Amberly says, you just know the people peddling these narratives at every opportunity would be the first ones to whinge if we crashed out of a cup early by playing too many youngsters. And that is the irony, is that we have gone out of the cup competitions like the FA Cup and the League Cup. We've rotated in these games. We think about when we went out to Liverpool earlier this season in the FA Cup. If you have a look at the team that lost 2-0 to Liverpool, it was not the team that beat them 3-1 in the game in the Premier League. Nelson started this game. Why has this happened? So every time I basically go onto my Google Chrome at the moment, it decides to change my search engine, which is incredibly frustrating. So Arsenal 0 to Liverpool. Hopefully it'll come up with a scoreline now. I'll be able to show you the exact lineup that we had on that day. 7th of January 2024, the lineup was Ramsdale in goal, Ben White, Saliba, Gabriel, Kivior, Jorginho, Rice, Odegaard. Oh, no, that's not right. Hold on. And Nelson on the left-hand side. So you had Saka and Nelson on the left-hand side. So we started Nelson in this game. If you look at the game against City the season before, which was City 1, Arsenal 0, have a look at the team that played in this game in 2023. The team was Turner, Tomiyasu, Holding, Gabriel, Tierney, Xhaka, Partey, Vieira, Saka, Nketiah, and Trossard. We rotate in these cup games because we've needed to rotate in these cup games, and we should be rotating in cup games. But the frustration is obviously that we've been in these positions where, sadly, we're going up against very, very decent sides. If we have a look at the West Ham game earlier on in the campaign, which we obviously lost at the West Ham Stadium, our team was Ramsdale, Ben White, Kivior and Gabriel at centre-half. Kivior playing right-sided centre-back. Zinchenko, Havertz, Jorginho and Vieira in midfield. Nelson and Nketiah, Trossard as the front three. And then if we have a quick look at the Brighton game, which we lost in the League Cup earlier on, was it 2-0? Was it 3-0? 3-0 in not the 3-0 one. What was the score? Was it 3-1? 2-1 against Brighton? I'm trying to find what the score was. I can't remember what the score was. I've tried to block it out of my mind so much. 3-1. Here it is. The lineup for Arsenal that day was Carl Heine in goal, Cedric at right back, Marquinhos at right wing, Nelson at left wing, Vieira at 10. Nketiah up top, Elneny and Lokonga at defensive midfield, Holding and Tierney and Saliba at the back. And this is what I mean. Like, you can ask and you can whinge and you can whine about the fact that Arteta is not giving kids a chance. He has a deep squad anyway. He's rotating for these cup games because he needs to give some of these players opportunities. And it is costing us in these games. And then we moan that we're getting knocked out of cup competitions. So you can't have both. You can't have it both ways. You can say that we need to give more opportunities to young players, more opportunities to the deeper part of the squad. And the best times to do those are in cup competitions when the stakes are the lowest, as opposed to the Champions League, of course, and the Premier League. And then we moan about the fact that we go out of those cup competitions because the teams we're going up against don't rotate as much. The biggest problem we've got right now, for me, is not that we're not given the opportunities that we have to, it's that we don't have the depth. The depth has not been there to rotate as heavily as we would like. What I'd like to see is Arsenal to have 15, 16, 17 core players that you can start in the majority of your games very confidently. And I think we're very close. I think we're only two or three signings away from that. And then what you can do is you can start a competitive team with one or two young players thrown in. And don't forget, we started Charles Sago Jr. against Brentford in our 1-0 win over them in the League Cup as well this season. So don't forget too quickly that these things are, of course, happening. Yassine says there's over 1,000 people watching right now and there's only 166 likes. Let's make sure we drop a like on the video, people. What I recognise is about 10% of people watching the videos, only 10% drop likes on the videos. We get over 10K views on most of these morning shows, but only 1,000 likes, which is the target. But I always think, what the 90% of you doing? Freeloaders. Arthur says, Tom, what's your take on Howard Webb's explanation of the penalty not awarded to Forrest? I thought VAR are not meant to referee, or rather re-referee the match. I haven't seen them specifically. Let me have a quick check, if I can, on what the exact quotes were. We've set up quite a high threshold for penalising contact, is what he said. I haven't got the exact quotes. Apparently, he needs to watch videos to see it. He says, we're under a lot of pressure here for putting a Luton fan on VAR. Okay, this is definitely a... this is definitely a... what's the word? Spoof quote. That's it. I can't find the exact quote. So, but it seems like from the PGMOL statement earlier is that Nottingham Forest should have had a penalty in their 2-0 defeat. I don't know what the score was when they should have been given that penalty, to be fair. So I don't know how it would affect the game. But it's... I think, Dale Johnson of ESPN does a fantastic job of breaking down a lot of the decisions. I don't always agree with Dale's analysis of the decisions and of the way in which it's put in. I didn't agree with the way in which the decision against Forest was kind of put. So let me find the exact quote. I don't want to misquote Dale. Let's see if it is... It was basically regarding the key incident between Everton and Nottingham Forest. He says, the Premier League's independent key match incidents panel has ruled that there was only, in capital letters, one VAR/referee error of three incidents. Nottingham Forest complained about the following controversial... Oh, hold on. Oh, dearie me. I couldn't mute myself for that one. The TGT sneeze is back in full force. that's me being on Twitter, so I can't press the mute button. But yeah, it was the capitalization of the word one, like VAR decision. As if that makes it any less of an issue. Well, I think there's arguments for all three, but the fact that one and the word only before the word one, it's not a case of like there only being one that's a problem. It's the fact that there is any that are a problem. There should not be these issues, and VAR should not be making mistakes. It's not, and I have to rephrase this. It should not be the officials that are in charge of the VAR making these mistakes. Amberley's absolutely right. Oh, we only made one mistake. One is too many. It's fine when the referee makes a mistake on field. It's not fine when the referees who are in charge of video replays then get it wrong. That's when it crosses a line. So when you use words like only and in capital letters, one, it's not... I cannot get on board with that because it comes very much apologetically, like, or, you know, it was only one. I don't buy into it. But again, I rate a lot of what Dale does with his work on ESPN and breaking down those refereeing decisions. I just didn't agree with how that specific incident and that story has been kind of made up to be. Well, it was only one. Now, if I'm misinterpreting it, then I hold my hands up. But I just think that you can't make excuses like that and say it's only one. I'm sorry, but when you've got a referee making a mistake on field, okay. But if there's a mistake then in the VAR who have the benefit of refereeing or rather re-refereeing the game with the video, which is, I hate that phrase, like VAR is not there to re-referee games. It should be. It should be there for that. That's exactly what it should be for. VAR should be there so that we get the right decision, so that we can re-referee a mistake, so that if the rule has not been applied or something has been missed and the wrong decision has been made, we can re-referee an incident so that the right decision is come to. That's it. And the problem is that I feel like the refereeing union, if you like, because I think that's almost what it's come to, them against us. That's how it feels at the moment. It feels like it's a them against us. And I think that them against us mentality and kind of the feel around it, I think has changed things. We've seen plenty of hints. Mike Dean saying things like, I didn't want to send my mate to the monitor. You know, suggestions like that. I've seen numerous times where blatant and obvious errors will not magnanimously be disagreed by refereeing pundits at times, despite the fact that we can all see that it was a penalty, it was a handball, it was a red card, or just sometimes the idea that these certain decisions aren't even talked about. I haven't seen any discussions of that Kilman tackle on Havertz, which was a blatant red card, probably because Arsenal were winning the game, but that type of error should be talked about. If that happens in a game where the game is level and it can be a really big moment, same with the Tomiyasu and Jackson one, Those two talking points have completely disappeared from the space because Arsenal won both those games relatively comfortably. That's That, for me, is a frustration. Clive says VAR should be there to support the referee, but the referee should take the lead. If it feels like VAR is leading the officiating from a room a mile away, that cannot be right. And this is absolutely true. Like, the problem is that referees psychologically are not making calls now. But the issue is, and I've talked about this before, so I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I am going to say it again. The issue is that psychologically, referees are not making decisions anymore. They're not making decisions that before, if VAR didn't exist, that they would make, because they are relying upon a system being there to right their wrongs, if they believe. And if they're not 100% sure, they just won't make the call. But the problem is that the rulings around VAR set a threshold at a certain level, which is too high for VAR to then get involved. So a penalty call, for instance, what is for many, and the majority I think would agree, is a penalty in a certain instance, the referee won't give it because he's relying on that decision to be made by the VAR. Problem is the current rules are that the threshold for a VAR getting involved with a penalty call, the threshold is incredibly high. And so even if there's contact, meaningful contact, which does impede the player, for instance, and the player goes down, because the threshold's so high, the VAR won't get involved. And because the referee was relying on VAR to correct the mistake, they won't give the call in the first place. And this is where we've got, sadly. So you've got two choices. Referees need to be briefed and told that they need to basically treat games as if VAR doesn't exist, which is what I think a referee should go into the game to do. A referee should referee a game as if VAR has never been invented. That's what my view is, because I think that's the way that in that way you will get the best refereeing performance possible. However, if a mistake is obviously made, the VAR is there, in my opinion, to re-referee the game. It is there to re-referee it, because if the referee on field makes an error, we need to come to find the correct result, which can only be found with the benefit of replay cameras, of different angles, of slow motion in some situations, of the drawing of lines. It is there to re-referee games. So I hate that phrase when they say VAR is not there to re-referee games, because that's exactly what it is there for. But the referee should treat a game always as if they are the protagonist in the decision-making aspects of the game, and as if VAR is actually not there. So at the moment, we're in an environment where the officials, for me, are the bigger problem, because I don't think they're of a standard or of a consistency good enough at the level that they need to operate at. However, VAR is also of an issue because it is being run by those same people. The environment that both exist in benefits neither. And that's sadly the situation we find ourselves in. Referees are an environment where they're ultimately on the back foot, and the VAR is being operated by people of who I personally, in my own opinion, believe are not of a consistent level to be able to operate this equipment. And I think personally it should be operated by a third party, rather than the current group of referees, because as Mike Dean has exposed, these referees can sadly be making calls or not be making calls because of emotional sides to it as well, which is not the way it should happen. Ty says, sorry, but how can they get it so right in the Champions League and keep the game flowing? And in the Premier League, refs are so poor at it. The level of refs is so poor nowadays. Rob says, ABS, the referees are swerving decisions, and then VAR swerves their decision. It's crazy. On the volley says the problem is people behind VAR are former referees who have had several mistakes during their time as well. Look, no, it's never going to be perfect. You can't expect perfection, but you should be able to expect a very low error rate when a decision can be looked upon at different camera angles. You should be able to get a very low error rate. And yet we find ourselves season upon season, week upon week, game upon game with refereeing and VAR controversies. And that should not be the case. Omar says, watching the Bayern game, every fan wearing red, the atmosphere are brilliant. I recall Arsenal calling on fans to wear red for the Bayern game, and not many did. Could we as fans do more? Of course we can do more. But also the club can do more as well. I think that absolutely the club do a lot. But Red Action also spoke about the frustrations around a lack of a TIFO that could have been organised, that could have potentially been crowdfunded as well for the Bayern game that didn't happen. So I think it's a case of there's more that can be done on both sides. And I think that both would certainly say that, yes, we can both improve what we're currently doing. Adam says, do you think the VAR would be better if a referee could request it at any point in the game instead of them butting in? No, I think there's something that could be said maybe about if you wanted to remove VAR, that players and managers have a challenge system. Maybe that's something like in tennis, you've got challenges, you can check it. Is that the way forwards? I don't know, because then are you going to miss some? And then you'd have lots of discussions about, well, should have Arsenal challenged that call when actually they didn't realise that it was offside or that it was a penalty and they just in the moment thought that it was or wasn't and they've wasted a challenge or they've not used their challenge or they've run out of challenges when it then really mattered. So it's a difficult system to try and implement at the same time also. I'm a real goodness, says VAR, found out how bad referees actually are. Logan says it's called an assistant, but not used like that. It's more used like an overlord. I mean, if anything, it's not even used like an overlord because it's not overruling enough at times. The threshold, as I say, is too high. Tizer says, where do you stand with ex-players being in the room? Could you imagine the backlash to Neville helping disallow a goal or rescind a card? Considering the issues Forrest had with the VAR being a Luton fan. But the problem with the human side of things is that everyone is a football fan involved in football. You know, 99.99% of the people involved in football support a club, have a unconscious bias somewhere. So are you ever going to be able to escape from that? If you bring ex-footballers into the frame, ex-footballers have, as we have seen, their own agendas, their own biases, their own skews. So I'm not sure that's the way forwards at all. So it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult to come to a realization of who does it. I still think a third party is necessary. I just don't know who that third party is or how that would come about. And I often criticize people for not having the solutions if they want change. But in this case, it's tricky. Do you bring them in from abroad? Do you do the VAR from abroad? Should the VAR for the Premier League be officials from La Liga and vice versa? You know, is that the way forwards? Do you do it from offshore? Is that the way forwards? I'm not sure. Maybe that could be something as well, because then there's not necessarily that emotional link between the referee on field and the referees off the field. Chris says, hi, Tom, do you think there isn't any possibility that refs have been mic'd up? I hope so. I think that's certainly something that could be better. There are suggestions that referees will begin to announce to the crowd why decisions have been made, what decision has been taken, which is good for the clarity for the crowd. But at the same time, it's not going to improve anything really in terms of the decision making. It's just going to provide improvements in the clarity of decision making for those fans that are inside the ground. Sam says, who is your player of the season so far? I think first half of the season, it was Declan Rice. I think for the second half of the season, it's a toss-up between Ødegaard and Havertz. It's very close between those three. Saka is definitely in the mix as well. He's been kind of consistent across all of those. So, and Gabriel is definitely there as well. So I think there are five candidates for player of the season. You've got Saka, Rice, Gabriel, Havertz and Ødegaard. They are your five, I think, that will be chosen from. And I'll tell you what, that is a massive credit to the recruitment, of course. We've seen Declan Rice and Havertz join the club this season. Two of them are in our top five in terms of contributors to player of the season. So I think you have to kind of pick from those five. I don't really see anybody. I think Ben White is arguably a bit hard done by not being in that top five, but Ben White could certainly be spoken about too. But outside of those five, I think White's the only one. So six, we'll give it a top six. So White, Saka, Gabriel, Rice, Havertz, Ødegaard. There are your six, I think, that you have to choose from. If you want to talk about across the entire season, I think maybe Gabriel has been the best. But I think Declan Rice was the most impactful in the first half of the season. And then you've got Ødegaard and Havertz in the second half of the season. And Saka also has had contributions, more so right at the beginning, but then has still maintained some contributions throughout the campaign as well. So it's tough. Real, real tough. Damien says, you're basically naming the first 11. Six of those 11, yeah. Saliba's had a decent campaign. Not as been as good as Gabriel, but still good. Our left back has been obviously up in the air, so we don't really know who is our starting left back. It's probably Tomiyasu, but Yuri and Timber may indeed take that next season. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Reyes had a decent season. He's going to win the Golden Glove, we imagine.
between now and the end of the campaign, but I wouldn't put David Raya amongst those top six. I think there's obviously been some errors in his games, but he's still been very, very good. Trossard's been very good in this second half of the season as well. Definitely deserves plenty of credit for his contributions to the season also. And I guess you have to put Jorginho has also contributed plenty during the campaign as well. There's loads to be said about, you know, certain players in this team, but I think there is a top six that are a standout, certainly amongst the rest. Duncan says, Tom, do you think City will drop points? Absolutely, yes. We're manifesting this now. If you're asking me if I think City will drop points, I'm going to tell you yes, because I need it to happen. We need it to happen. We hope that it happens. And if it doesn't, all we can ask is that we win the rest of our games. All I want right now, beyond obviously City dropping points, is for Arsenal to take it to the last game. I just hope we take it to the last game. And that's really, really important. You've got to take it to the last game for the first time in many, 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 many years that Arsenal was still in the title race come the final game of the season. I'm trying to think the last time Arsenal could have won the league but didn't on the final day. Because the last times we've been in title races, either we've wrapped it up before the end of the season or it's been decided before the final game of the season. Can anyone tell me, is it as far back as 89? Was that the last time Arsenal could have won the league on the final day? There's a trivia question for you. Some of our older listeners maybe in the chat box will know. But I'm trying to think the last time Arsenal were either not yet crowned champions or could still win the league going into the final day of the season. Amar Aguna says, if they drop points, I think Fulham is a good shout. And 1999 was the last time. So 1999 was the last time Arsenal could win the league or were involved in the title race on the final day of the campaign. So you're going to go back 25 years, which is a hell of a long time since Arsenal were last in the title race come the last game of the season. Of course, Arsenal finished second in 1999. And on that final day, we beat Aston Villa. But the game before that, we lost to Leeds. And it's probably less said about that the better, right? But it's like 25 years ago. Arsenal were last involved in a title race that was still yet to be decided upon the final day of the season before that. I think we're going back to 89, which is obviously 35 years ago. How time flies, eh? Incredible scenes. Anyway, I think we will wrap the show up there. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. Really appreciate your time, as always. I hope you have a fantastic day. Enjoy yourselves and enjoy a Wednesday. Get past Wednesday. And it's Thursday, which is, for me, one of the best days of the week. You look ahead and you can see the weekend very much so on the horizon. I have hopefully potentially a show tonight. I'm not sure if we will, but maybe definitely one tomorrow morning, because you can always count on this coming back every day at 8 a.m. If you do drop a like on the video, you are helping us towards our 1k every day challenge, and that would be incredibly appreciated. So if you could drop a like, many thanks. It costs nothing and it really does help us out. Stay safe, stay well, stay happy and respectful, and as always, up the Arsenal. It's the 90 plus minute. All your mates around and you've got a McNuggets share box ready to go, and you know a late winner's coming. Your mates already got booked for a double dip in and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfection. Order now on the McDonald's app for your McDelivery. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
No.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.